Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany, and as always, I am so honored and excited that you have joined me on this podcast. Thanks for listening. I know I've gotten a couple of extra listeners over the past couple of weeks, so I just want to thank you so much for tuning in and joining me on this journey. It's always such an honor that people choose to spend their time listening to me talk to people, and that's always just so great. So thanks. Today, I am joined by a wonderful and beautiful former educator, Kylie Elizabeth. Kylie, aka the Virtuoso Educator, is a mother of two and has a unique educational and professional background with experiences in K-12 classrooms and administrative roles for 10 plus years. The Virtuous Educator understands the importance. Kylie Elizabeth, aka the Virtuoso Educator, is a mother of two and has a unique educational and professional background with experiences in K-12 education and administrative roles for over 10 years. The Virtuous Educator understands the importance of cultural responsiveness in education and strives to share best practices, experiences, and ideas to help parents, educators, and students build strong relationships for any educational environment, and close educational gaps, and overall help children to thrive. Our conversation was so heartwarming and beautiful. We covered topics around parent and guardian engagement and involvement in schools, but we really dived into technology in schools and social media and the impact on our students and the impact on our lives just in general. This conversation was just so wonderful, and you know, Kylie brought so much data and knowledge to the conversation, so I'm really excited to share that with you, so let's get into it. Hello, hello, and welcome to Conscious Pathways. I am joined by Kylie Elizabeth. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much, Brittany, for having me on today.
I'm so excited to have you on. Right before I started recording, we were talking about, you're in Arizona right now, so we're kind of talking, I'm in San Diego, so about where we are, and how have you been in Arizona for a long time?
I moved to Arizona, this year will be 4 years in June for me, so right during the pandemic, yeah.
Oh, wow. You moved right during the pandemic.
It was fun. Fun times.
I also moved back to San Diego. Yeah. I was here before and I moved away. And then during the pandemic, I was like, I think I want to go home now.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I haven't had that thought yet. It's too cold in Wisconsin. I don't miss the snow. I don't miss any of that. Oh, yeah. I'm from Wisconsin. So I don't miss any of it. I will stick it right here to Arizona. It is a little hot, but I'll wait out those couple months. Compared to the snow, so yeah, it's all good.
Yes, I grew up with snow. I lived on the East Coast for many years, and it's beautiful to look at. I don't love being in it. Mm.
Yes,
and oftentimes when you live in the snow, you do have to be in it sometimes.
Yes, yes. Up to your knees.
Yes.
No thanks.
Yes,
I don't want it anymore.
You have to scrape out the car, and it's just
slip on the ice.
Oh, it's so much work.
Shovel the stairs,
and it's just like. You know what? I'll pay the sunshine tax.
Right. Pretty much. Basically.
Yeah. I'll pay it. It's fine. Yeah. If I just get to stay in the sunshine, I love the heat. I'm a California girl through and through, born and not mostly raised in Southern California. So for me, I'm like a little lizard. Mm-hmm. So I will just hang out in the heat all day. But like, it's fine. I'll chill. Yeah. I'll get my summer tan on.
Right.
But I'm so excited that you're joining me today. I was looking through your bio and doing my research, and I'm just so excited to see the topics that you discuss and so excited to have you joining
Thank
me.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. It's nice to be like on the other side. You know, I'm used to just podcasting everybody. And so thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I know it's like different to be on the other side, because on this side, it's like, okay, I have the questions. I have this. Yeah. Is it recording? And on the other side, you're like, I'm vibes.
Yes. I'm just here for the show.
Yes, yes, yes. So tell me a little bit about how you got your start in education, who or what inspired you? How did we get here?
Yeah, so my educational journey is pretty interesting, and I do talk to a lot of different people about it, but we'll kind of go back to elementary days and primarily middle school. So I've always been a choir student and like theater. I've always loved singing, even when I was a baby. Like my grandmother, she used to call me Screamy Mimi because all I would do is like scream and yell all day. And then, you know, we'd go into elementary and fifth grade is probably when I really started choir. And then in middle school, I just really had a really awesome choir teacher, and she just was, you know, really nice to everybody, like the really cool teacher, and she also did the theater after school for the after school club, and, you know, I just really got inspired by my teachers, even a couple others in that middle school. And, you know, I just always felt like included in her group and kind of at that point was like, oh, I want to be a teacher and I want to kind of be like her. And same thing for my high school choir teacher. So I stayed in choir, did all the extra choirs I could in high school, and I really loved it. And so I had the goal of being a music teacher in while I was finishing up high school, and then I did get recruited to a music program at my college in Kenosha, Wisconsin, UW-Parkside. So I went to school for music education to be a middle school or high school choir teacher. And long story short, my school at the time, they had suspended their education department, and I was a student that got caught in the crosshairs of if I could be in that program or not. Long story short, I just graduated with my music degree without the education. And then I went to my license to master's program. So I kind of went into a program right away to do my master's. And I don't know how much longer you want me to go into the story, but it does change. Okay. I don't stay in music all the time, but that's kind of how I got my start, was just really interested in the teachers that really, you know, were caring and were really involved with their students, like really showed that they cared. And I kind of strive to be a person and a teacher like that. And I will say that I'm pretty sure I kind of have that title too, as like the cool, fun teacher when I taught high school for 7 years. So it was really fun for me. But yeah, so I kind of went in a different track too. So I don't know how much you want me to explain of that, but that's how I got started. Yeah.
That's so exciting. I love that you found you could actually combine two of your favorite things, which is teaching and music, and combining those things together.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, the virtuoso educator.
Yes, I get it. Thank you. I'm glad you know the term. And everybody, a lot of people are like, where does that come from? Yes. And so, yeah, virtuoso, by definition, you know, just means well-rounded or somebody that's like highly educated and all those things. And, you know, it is also a musical term that we use in music. So to describe the feeling of the music. And I just kind of like love that word. And when you talk about me teaching things that I love, so when I say I kind of transitioned, so as I was in my master's program, I switched over to doing long-term subbing while I was still finishing, because I still wanted to teach. And I ended up getting looped into a culinary arts class at the high school in Racine, Wisconsin. And my grandmother used to have a catering business ever since I was little. So from like the age of 9 to 23, I worked in this family restaurant and catering business for all those years. So I had the experience. So I was able to then teach the class. And then that kind of led me into the world of career technical ed and family and consumer sciences. And so I ended up teaching all of those classes for about 7 years before I moved here to Phoenix. And then once I moved to Phoenix, I transitioned to use my master's degree in administration and curriculum and instruction. I switched over to administration. I ran a small, what we call a micro school. I ran that for about 2.5 years, and then I switched over to a role at the Department of Education. So I'm kind of like all over the place, but I get to, I do oversee family and consumer science programs here at the state. And, you know, I just really love what I do. And then kind of on the flip side, I offer my consulting services and some other things through my own personal business around education. So I'm like all over the place, but I love what I do and I love the topic of education, and it's highly important, obviously. That's why we're here. But yeah, so that's kind of what the world that I'm in, like everywhere.
Yeah. That's amazing. I always love hearing about what people do with their kind of degrees around education, right? Because there's so much that you can do with that. Like, obviously, you can do teaching and go into education and, you know, teach the grade levels that, you know, you vibe most with.
Yeah.
Whether that's early childhood, you know, middle school, elementary, high school, right? College level. You know, obviously, that's one direction you can go into. But there's also a multitude of ways that you can utilize your knowledge of education and utilizing your knowledge of development, human development, how people learn, right? So there's so many things that we can do with it. Because I know, as you know, as former educators and everything like that, you know, burnout is, it kind of just comes with the territory of education.
Absolutely.
And so, and so knowing that you can step out and do something else, and education will always, you know, be there in some way or another. So you could always come back to it once you're feeling, you know, refreshed and revived and you're like, okay, I'm ready to get back in that classroom. Yeah. Because I think as educators know, it's hard to stay away.
It is. And, you know, I think for me, the transition happened during COVID. So 2020, spring of 2020, or the end of the school year in 2020 was my last year of teaching. And, you know, I kind of watched my seniors. I had a lot of senior students when the pandemic started. And, you know, they missed out on prom. They missed out on graduation. Like, it was very, like, depressing in a sense. And I didn't, I knew I did not want to be behind a screen teaching people virtually. Like, I'm a face-to-face person. So that was rough. But then in my position now, you know, I get to travel the state and see all these programs. And every time I'm in a culinary room, I'm like, man, I'm like, I miss teaching. Like, I want to come back in the classroom. Yeah. And, but I'm like, oh, do I really? I'm like, nah, probably not. But and sometimes I miss it. And sometimes I like really do just more miss the engagement with the students and getting to have those conversations and kind of guiding them. Cause that was the best part of the job for me.
It really is. It's those students that, like, they just reel you back in.
Yes, they do.
To it sometimes. I miss, there's a lot of aspects of teaching I don't miss, but there's a lot of aspects like working with the students, working with the families and the curriculum and just all of those really beautiful things. I do miss those aspects.
But all the drama, I don't want the drama no more.
Yeah, it's looking...
Because we still hear it, you know, in my role, I still deal kind of with some of the drama, but it's like, nah, I don't have to, it doesn't, you know, not directly to me do I have to deal with it. But education is not a easy role or easy field to be in, which some people mistake it as. But yes, that burnout is definitely real, especially for new teachers. You know, I would say even seasoned teachers post-COVID, you know, that just changed a lot of things. And then I think just the dynamic and the politics in education right now just make it 20 times worse than what it should be. So there's always those pieces as well. But I think the people that are there for the right reasons stay and try to bear it out as much as possible. But at the end of the day, we're still all people and we have only so much that we can bear at a time. And that looks different for everybody. So
it really does. It looks different for everyone. And, you know, as we keep advocating for changes within our educational system, we're getting there. We're slowly but surely chiseling away at it. But it's a big system. And so it's gonna take a lot of work and a lot of advocacy and a lot of activism to get there. You know, but in the meantime, we can keep taking care of ourselves and doing what we can, especially for those students. But I know there's a lot of your content that you talk about. You're talking about parents, you're talking about community, and you're talking about, you know, partnerships within education. So do you want to kind of go a little bit more into that about, you know, how can parents be involved in education? What does that parent involvement look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So parent engagement and involvement is also another topic that kind of got me into wanting to be in education, just stemming from some personal things in my childhood. And, you know, parents being involved in their students' education is, and I shouldn't just limit to parents, right? Any guardian, anybody that is watching over children that are in school, school-age children, and supporting anybody, even if they're through college or all those things, But it is really important to have a support system in our education. And I am basically utilizing my platform to really just have parents and guardians and people in the community just really be more aware of some of the topics that are happening in education. And just to kind of start thinking on themselves and what they're doing within their own homes and within their schools, and how do they network with their children's teachers? How are you supporting your child to the best of your capability, right? And it doesn't mean that your home, and this, and I do tackle kind of any educational platform. It doesn't matter if you're doing public, private, homeschool. At the end of the day, you still have to give your best as that parent and guardian, that support of that child, especially because, you know, some school environments aren't the best for our kids. And I, a lot of people kind of mistake that. They're like, oh, you're only, you know, highlighting the negative things. And it's like, I'm not, you know, we do talk about the good things that happen. There are great things that happen in schools. And even, you know, my children in the new district that they're in this year, they are making wonderful gains in their academics due to the staff that they have. They have very dedicated teachers. And I love that for them. But there isn't that in every place or for every child and every family. And so it's more of, let's not just rely on the schools to do things for us. Like, we have to, if we're uncomfortable with what's happening with our kids, we have to be able to advocate. So I share resources on and content on, do you know what to do to advocate for your child? Is that if they're being suspended, do you know how to get help with that if it's not justified? Do you, you know, if they are receiving bad grades all the time, do they have an IEP or a 504 plan? Is it being followed? Because both my children have one of each. And, you know, I have to advocate over and over, like, hey, remind, like, my daughter has a 504 plan. She should get extra time to do her homework, and she shouldn't be penalized and recess taken away for her homework not being complete, you know, kind of those types of conversations. And even stemming to, you know, what is your engagement with the school? And a lot of people do kind of feel that they can't go to the school and be included and all of these things. But I elaborate on ways of being included, like inclusive in the schools, and joining and engaging with those teachers. Is, are you following up with them more outside of just the parent-teacher conference? Do you check on how your child is doing at home? Do you have these conversations daily? Like, hey, how did your day go? Like, did anything bad happen? Did anything good happen? You know, doing those check-ins with your kids. But then also reminding parents that they can join the PTA at schools. They can show up to school board meetings to hear what is actually happening within their school or their district. And just having people be more aware, because if you are especially relying on public education, which most of us do have to rely on that to educate our children, then you need to be included and have a voice, because at the end of the day, the people whose voices are being heard are those that are showing up. And a lot of times it's not people within our community or within a lower class of community or income, because they can't afford to give that time up. But at the end of the day, we have to make the time, and we have to do what's right for our kids to be able to support them in their education. So I talk a lot on different ways of that, and just the people that are on my podcast, you know, kind of reach out to me, or I reach out to them, but they have resources. So my page does have a lot of educators with really great resources for you to utilize or connect with for other supports as well.
Yes. And oftentimes when it comes with, you know, parent or guardian engagement, you know, educators, we want parents to be involved,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Most of us do. I can't speak for every single educator, but I did have an educator come up to me at a conference recently, and she was like, you know, what are some strategies that I can use to get my parents more engaged in our program? You know, we want parents to be engaged, and we want to do that in ways that are culturally responsive and sustainable,
absolutely,
right? We want to do it in a way that makes sense for our families to be engaged. And so it's, you know, a mutual relationship here. Like, you know, the teachers want to see that engagement, and I think that parents want to be engaged, but sometimes there's that disconnect on what's the best way to be engaged and what's the best way to promote that engagement. And also, you know, while it is unfortunate that parents do have to be these constant advocates, especially if your student has, you know, a disability or special needs. Mm-hmm. You have to constantly be there attending those meetings, you know, being in contact with your teachers, being in contact with the school, making sure that things are being handled and done correctly. You know, in some ways it's unfortunate that you have to consistently do that, yeah, because you're doing that in addition to whatever work you have, whatever other things are going on in life. Yeah. So it's just a kind of an additional thing that you kind of, in a lot of ways, have to do.
Yes.
But there are ways that partnerships can be made to make both people's lives a lot easier, yeah, and to really make sure that student is getting the best quality of education and they're getting the best resources and they're getting everything that they need in order to be successful.
Absolutely.
That's what we want at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the main point, is to be successful. And it's not to say, you know, every kid is going to be a perfect GPA at the end of the day. It's, you know, we got to meet the kids, mm-hmm, where they are. But I do believe with more support from home, and I'm an advocate that education, mm-hmm, does start at home first, and our kids learn our habits, learn our mentalities around education. And, you know, for me as an educator, I try to instill good habits with my kids, even around mindset of education and explaining the importance, mm-hmm, of it. And yeah, they're not going to use every skill that they learn as an adult. I think that's a question of like, why do we got to know this? Like, we're not going to, you know, and I still kind of think back to certain things that I did. I'm like, why did I need to know that? But eventually things kind of, mm-hmm, as we get older and mature and we think about, you know, if our career goes in a direction or it changes, like we do reference a lot of times our memories and our skills that we do learn in some, mm-hmm, type or form from our education. And, you know, I think it's important to put a good mindset around education. Therefore, our kids will be more inclined to learn. Mm-hmm. But again, not saying that that's the only thing that, you know, hinders a lack of education in schools, because we know that there's a lot of things. But it is important, I think, for the narrative to come from families that it's important. Mm-hmm. It's important also for those that kind of talk bad on the role of teaching itself and can, you know, degrade or put down the position or the career, mm-hmm, of an educator. You know, I've had so many students in my past when I taught early childhood education, and like future teacher prep courses, like, they're like, my parents don't want me to be a, mm-hmm, teacher because of blah, 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 blah. Like, and it's like, you know, these are the people that are educating your kids. And unless you're going to do it, yeah, you can't sit here and tell them not to do it. Like, you know, let them do what they're passionate, yes, about. Because we, I think I shared this data, mm-hmm, in my last podcast. We're slated for about 100,000 educators exiting the field by the, mm-hmm, end of this year. And it's due to multiple reasons. And I kind of equated that, mm-hmm, you know, think of if these are healthcare professionals, think of these are lawyers, if they're, yeah, you know, whoever, like main essential, you know, we'll go back to COVID days, essential workers, like educators are essential, mm-hmm, and they're essential to our communities. And,
yeah,
we can't talk negatively upon it, as well as if we have something, an issue, we need to show up and speak on it. Don't use social media, mm-hmm, and don't, you know, not bring your kids somewhere because you don't agree. Like, you have to have those conversations.
Yes, yes, yes. And I couldn't agree more. Just our perceptions of education, they really do matter. Mm-hmm. And as we're seeing, or we're seeing a lot of educators leaving the field, and exactly what you said, you know, during COVID times, we saw that teachers are essential workers, right? So kids had to be home, parents were home, and they're like, this is hard.
Yeah.
They're like, how do the teachers do this? Mm-hmm. How do you guys do this all day with like multiple students? Yeah. And we're thinking about, you know, early childhood education too, because that's my background. And, you know, having to teach students virtually at that age is hard. Their attention spans already aren't that much yet. And then you're adding screen to this. Okay.
Yeah. Great, wasn't it?
But our perceptions, so fun. But our perceptions really do matter, especially when we're talking about education, we're talking about the importance of this field, and seeing all these educators leave and seeing how dejected educators feel and how it takes a real toll on their physical health, their mental health, their psyche, like all of these things,
yeah,
it takes a big toll on them.
Absolutely.
And so when we talk negatively about our field or our negative, you know, view of teachers, that's not necessarily making future educators want to study education,
exactly,
right? It's not making people want to to follow this field. And I remember even when I was younger, I wanted to be a teacher. Like I went to third grade, I had a great third grade teacher. And I was like, this feels really nice. Yeah. I liked this experience. Mm-hmm. I want to do this for other people. And I don't know who it was, but someone told me like, oh, you don't want to be a teacher. Like they don't make any money, which again, I've said this before. It's true.
It is but true. Also, it is, unfortunately.
We do pay teachers more. But when I did finally get in the classroom and start teaching, the way it just clicked, mm-hmm. the way I felt so passionate about what I was learning, what I was doing, yeah. the impact that I was making, it just made so much sense. I was so passionate about it and continued to learn it. And even today, continuing to learn more about education. Absolutely. And it matters the way that we talk about it, the way that we support our teachers, the way that we support our, you know, just students as they're navigating through this. Like it's hard enough as it is. Yeah. We don't need to make it even harder. Yeah.
And you're right. And, you know, everything does start, you know, from the top down. And sometimes it's, you know, kind of, mm-hmm. it's a teacher, it's an admin, it's a student, you know, it's a parent because there are parents that kind of go in all arms blazing, like they're ready to, you know, but it's like the approach, I guess, in our world that we're in and everybody's experience is very different. You know, we definitely need to do better by, you know, supporting, because at the end of the day, I say this all the time, it takes a village to raise children, and just to support each other, it's mm-hmm. even raising each other and supporting each other. And, you know, schools that have like really great, like parent engagement and usually have a lot of programming where parents are invited to the school and not just for the kids, right? Not to come for a parent teacher conference and like a play or something. It's specifically mm-hmm. geared for the parents to, you know, learn something new. You know, I just got invited to my children's school to help do their literacy review, you know, like go do these types of things, like mm-hmm. be involved. And you find that the climate where families usually are more looped in, usually are more engaged with that. And then on the flip side, you know, those administrators who really understand from the top down that teachers have a lot mm-hmm. on their plate. And, you know, are they finding ways to alleviate that, less students in the classroom? But as we lose people, that student-teacher ratio is going to get worse over time, or mm-hmm. we're going to just continue to lose people. And then that kind of goes into recruitment and retention and the issues with uncertified teachers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the list kind of goes on. So it's like we have to have yes. foundations in all of these areas that support a school system. And if we don't, that's when we're going to continue to have these problems in that way. Mm. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely beautifully put. And, you know, on the topic of just having programs, intentional programs for parents mm-hmm. to be involved and engaged in it, right? Outside of your traditional parent-teacher conferences or your, you know, if you're constantly kind of your only interaction with the parents is to either give them negative information or negative feedback, yeah. Or it's a stressful environment, like parent-teacher conference is not supposed to be stressful, right. But like if your only interaction, right, with the educator or the school, right, is negative. Yeah. And then if you think back, we look about cultural responsiveness, right? And a lot of, you know, people of color have had really negative interactions
yes.
in school. So when they have kids, right, their perception of school is already warped.
Yep.
That, oh, this really sucked for me, so it's probably going to suck for you too.
Absolutely.
Right? So if that's where they're coming from, right, you already have this barrier and this wall up. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways that you can incorporate families that is holistic, yeah. that is culturally, you know, relevant and responsive, and finding ways that gets them involved in that. Because not only are you making connections between the teachers and the parents, you're making connections between the entire like school community. Yeah. And the families, right? And just really strengthening this idea of your school community.
Yeah.
Because that's when you actually get so much benefit from it. And that's when you're getting the community involved and the parents are mm-hmm. actively engaged and like their feedback and they're giving you feedback and their feedback is actually heard and incorporated. Yeah. Are all really amazing strategies to just make sure that, you know, parents and families and guardians are just holistically involved.
Yeah. And yes. And you know, you say some good things. You know, I think over time, education and for people of color, it's a rough subject because it is included in not the best times of our history. And so people feel some type of way about it. And, you know, over time, narratives kind of can continue even through 2024. You know, we still have these racial discussions about education, and we kind of, I call it like a zigzag, like we have a very big zigzag pattern of up and downs of, you know, these topics in education. And I think a big point that a person made to me on another one of my podcasts is he was like, you know, we have a bad experience in our school as a child. We know, for lack of better terms, the school like has very racial issues, a lot of racial issues. And the student, this was the scenario, the student doesn't do well, right? They struggle with reading, which stems all the way from their early age. They drop out of school early. They end up in the prison system because they did something. They come out of the system and now they're a criminal with a record and they can't work, right? All these things. Then they have a child, right? But then what do? They send the child back to the same school district because that's where they live and they haven't moved out of that environment. And I think that is a big, that was like, oh, I didn't think about sending the kid, our own children, to back to where we came from, right? And 9 out of 10, you know, I won't say even say 9 out of 10 times, I'd probably say 2 out of 10 times, we're moving out of places that are not good for us. And even in a personal foundational relationship, a lot of people have a hard time pulling out of environments where they're familiar with, right? And so to up and move like I did to Arizona, like everybody can't do that. And and some parents can't afford to move out of their community to get away from that negativity that's in their environment. And that's another conversation too. You know, there's so many things that go into that and into people's perceptions. But again, I think at the end of the day, if we're all knowing that literally we're here to educate our kids and to make them, you know, viable citizens in our community. Cause I get so nervous for I have an 8-year-old and 11-year-old. I get nervous for like, what is it going to look like when they're older? Like, what is high school going to look like for them? Yes. College? Like, you know, are we going to still have these issues that we're seeing today in education and as adults for them? What is the world going to look like? You know, it's scary to think about, but we need these kids to be educated because I know you probably all see the statistics, like average reading for fourth grade competency, like proficiency is 40% across the state. Average, like across the United States, 40% of our fourth graders are proficient in reading. And that's just literacy skills. And so that's scary because a lot has to do with technology, which I won't start in that conversation right now. We could talk about that later. But technology is a huge thing too, as parents and as educators. You know, there isn't a reason why, even with the integration of technology, why we cannot be as active as we need to be or even just basic communication. We're all on our phones checking social media. We're all doing things on computers and tablets. There should not be a reason that you don't check in every other couple days with not even, you know, even on the little apps to talk to your teachers. And I do this weekly, but that's because my son has a history of behavioral issues. And I just check it. Hey, how was he this week? Was everything okay? Anything I need to know about? And usually they're really good about saying things to me if something happens, but you know, every once in a while the day goes and we don't hear, but it's like, that's what happens too when parents get things at the last minute, like, oh, this happened last week and this week. And then you're like, well, you didn't say anything to me. And you know, so it's kind of like all of those things, like, they have 30 kids. You might have 2 kids, like check up on your kids and, you know, but it's a lot to it. There's so much to it.
There really is so much to it. And I wholeheartedly agree that technology can be such an amazing benefit. It can provide that kind of open lines of communication. Obviously, you know, a lot of teachers just don't want to give out their like personal numbers because then that, you know, crosses a very, very important boundary that we do not want being crossed,
multiple reasons.
But reasons, right? We don't want that. But I love that there are apps that kind of create that middle line. Yeah. So like your information is still safe, but then parents can still have a spot where they can communicate to you. And then you could still have your boundaries where it's like, okay, you know, the app does not give me notifications past this time. I don't want to say right. protect your yeah. space, you know? And I love that because it does create an open line of communication between, you know, the parents and the teachers where they can mm-hmm. ask questions and, you know, do these types of things. Technology does have its downsides, obviously, of course. Yeah. And I know you probably saw this more with social media and how that impacts, you know, just the older students. I'm like with really young students, so they're not social media very much yeah. at like 3 years old. But, you know, it is getting younger and younger and younger that, you know, technology is just a part of our everyday existence.
Absolutely.
But I don't think we as educators are fully prepared and don't have the full guidance on like, okay, how do we mitigate this? How do we have these conversations? What does this look like? So that's a whole deep conversation.
Yeah,
that we
probably should have. I mean, we could talk about that on my, when you come on to mine, because I, listen, that's like a huge topic. And it's so funny because it's like, I joke mm-hmm. around. I'm serious, but not serious at the same time. But like, I use my kids are like my personal research, like, around this, like around these topics yeah. and, you know, what is it that I'm doing? And, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not a perfect mm-hmm. parent. I don't paint myself that way. I've had, in mm-hmm. a past relationship, I had, you know, even things said to me as a parent, like, you should be doing blah, 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 blah. Like, and it's like, oh, I didn't, mm-hmm. you know, even as an educator, I was like, dang, I'm not doing what I should be doing 100% and, you know, kind of correcting myself and my behaviors. Mm-hmm. But technology, you know, I even notice a big difference between my 8-year-old and my 11-year-old, because if you think about the time when it mm-hmm. came, COVID hit, and, you know, my son was right at starting kindergarten when that happened. And, mm-hmm. you know, he went from a week of in-person kindergarten to now virtual everything. And then we see why
yep.
our fourth graders or third graders have the impact of very low scores, because you think back to 2020, 19, 20 school year, this is where everything came. But mm-hmm. then you also see a very big addiction pattern to technology with younger kids. And so, you know, you mm-hmm. even say like you teach 3-year-olds, but if you notice, like, 3-year-olds are given, if you go to a restaurant, if you go see kids in yeah. the car, like, mm-hmm. they have it to their face.
Yeah.
And it could be educational, great. But
yep.
even the over excessive use of screen time does affect the brain chemistry and causes things like ADHD. It goes into health. And even for us as adults, you know, I think for us in our generation, like, we were kind of eased into it. And now we're just kind of used to it, like, this is what yeah. it is, but we have the cognitive function to step mm-hmm. away, read paper, you know, physical things, touch, write. Like, I have to write stuff down. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. But our kids, and even my 11-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, she, they'd rather be on a tablet. Like, they'd rather be looking at a screen, like, even than going outside and playing. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. And so you take things, you know, if my son has a punishment and he gets his electronic taken away, like, he has a very big, drastic, overarching response to that, like, not happy. Yes. Versus my daughter, you know, she'll be upset for a minute, mm-hmm. but then she'll kind of, you know, be okay. But those younger kids that throw tantrums, I just saw a video about this 12-year-old mm-hmm. boy who literally tore his mother's house apart. I tell you, every glass thing broken in their house over a cell phone being taken away. It can be very, wow. like, an issue if you don't mitigate and monitor what your kids are doing, what they're watching, yes. the content, even if it says it's a kids channel, you sit there and watch it. Did yep. you see the commercial that popped up? Yep. If you're watching YouTube streams, like, it's not kid friendly. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this in one of my yep. podcasts real quick, was that, you know, my daughter was using this app. It's very similar to Instagram, but it's using avatars. And long story short, she had like 1,400 followers. And I'm just like, wait, what is this?
Oh, wow.
Like, and yeah, so we can break yeah. that down later. But I'm just like, this is not okay. Oh, this my. Is not safe. You don't know who you're talking to. You know, mm-hmm. 10 people. Like, this is not, you know, so we yep. have to be careful. And just because our kids are in high school, like, that bullying, all of the mm-hmm. things, like, it's starting younger and younger. You'll see these kids maturing.
It is.
Maturing. I don't think they're yes. maturing. They just are being exposed to things mm-hmm. way too early. And we're not going to be able to control everything, but you need to have those conversations with your kids and actually look at their stuff and talk to yes. them through those things. And yeah, it's important.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's incredibly important. Exactly what you said. Kids are being exposed to more technology younger and younger and younger. Mm-hmm. And so it's important then that we're monitoring that as, you know, the adult in the room. And because sometimes there's, you know, we're not saying to like hide things from your kids completely, right? But there's some things that do need further nuance that at certain ages, they're not able to comprehend the nuance of certain materials and certain conversations. Right. And so sometimes it's like, you need an adult to kind of guide you through that. Absolutely. And you need an adult to know where you are developmentally, what you can understand and what you can't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, it surprises me sometimes. I'll see kids, you know, coming into preschool. And again, they're, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. And they'll be talking about a certain movie that they watch. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I watched this movie. And, you know, they might have older siblings or something like that. And I'm thinking about that. And I'm like, that is kind of violent.
Yeah.
You know, especially for them to see it at that age. It's, their brains aren't ready yet for that type of materials. And they're not ready to like kind of understand that because their brains are so black and white.
Yeah.
They don't quite understand nuance and they don't quite understand these certain things. And so there are certain conversations that need to be had, certain things that need to be put in place first before we start even thinking about seeing those things. Mm-hmm. And it can sound like you're being a helicopter parent, like, oh, it's just a movie, it's fine. But it's like, okay, but I'm looking at it from a developmental stage, absolutely. Right? And looking at, you know, knowing who that child is and can they handle this information and are they ready for these conversations? Like, they might just not be there developmentally. Yeah. So it might just be, we're not going to watch this movie. We're not going to watch this show. Yeah. And it does take a lot because, like you said, with YouTube, you put on a YouTube video, but then the ads. I've seen some crazy YouTube ads.
I have a condom ad on
I've seen some crazy ads on Instagram.
A condom ad and a sexual like, ad on a kid's YouTube platform. Like, what? Like, you know, come on, guys. Like, and but that's the thing. And they sneak it in. And I say they, whoever controls what. It does. Mm-hmm. The content gets snuck into to these videos with their kids. And it's scary. Mm-hmm. And even just what I saw, you know, if her dad had not said anything to me about that, I don't know how long it would have mm-hmm. took for me because I knew about the app, but I thought it was like really, you know, friendly. Yes. And then I like saw him like, oh no. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You really have to sit and watch things with them. And some of this stuff like just teaches really mm-hmm. like strange behaviors. You know, social media influencer, mm-hmm. you are called an influencer for a reason because you are influencing something. So you got to think if kids are like, you know, my like Mr. Beast is one, some like a lot mm-hmm. of, Minecraft people that are playing Minecraft mm-hmm. and think, but just the conversations they're having in general while they're playing the game, it's just like, wait, what did they just say? Like, and then, but this is tailored for kids, you know what I mean? So I try to, you know, really watch that. Mm-hmm. A statistic that I shared on my platform was mm-hmm. on average, children 8 to 18 spend 7.5 hours a day in front of a screen for entertainment alone. And that's not even mm-hmm. including their school day. And, you know, and all of this excessive screen time can equal up to about 114 days a year. So think about that. 114 days a year, we're sitting, and adults too, we're sitting in front of a screen. Yeah. And what that effect does to the human body, what it does to our brain, especially the younger they are and they're mm-hmm. developing. And so when we're talking about developing personalities, developing characteristics of who they are as a person, that's going to start developing in their brain and they kind of stay that way. And of course, you know, it leads to all, a lot of things mm-hmm. like sleep disturbance, ADHD and other behavioral disorders. And, you know, my son is autistic and I talk about him a lot. He's high functioning, but he sometimes misconstrues social cues. And I've noticed and recognized he finds things very funny when it's not. And, but then I heard this show he was watching one day and I'm like, oh, I get it now. So it's like, and then I had to cut that out, you know? So it's like, you have to kind of mm-hmm. understand your children. And some of our kids are a little crazy and some of them like really are like ways that we don't want them to be, but it's like, are they developing this themselves naturally or are they being influenced by what they're selecting to watch and play on? No gun games for my kid, you know, no Grand Theft Auto, mm-hmm. like none of this stuff. Like, no, we don't play these types of mm-hmm. things, like graphics and stuff like that. So we do have to be careful. And that's kind of a big thing I talk about. And real quick, you know, with the kids being on technology all day at school, and I know you did this. I hate being behind this computer. Like, I love podcasting, but with lights in our eyes all day, and just like, and there's some days where I'm just like, oh, I don't want to open this computer. I don't want to stare at the screen at my job. I have three laptops, you know, three computers. It's just like, it's overwhelming. Yeah. And so you think about that for an adult, how overwhelming it can be, but just imagine, you know, a child in a classroom with fluorescent lights, with the screen in front of their face, even high school students, you're going from one class to the other just to open a laptop. You know, where's the hands-on, where's the physical, tactile, kinesthetic, components of learning? You know, there's so many, there's auditory, visual, kinesthetic, you know, all of these different ways of learning, but we are now, in this age, very heavily reliant on technology. And when I ran my micro school, with my teachers, I encouraged, like, because we were with a program that did require a certain set of hours on the online curriculum. And so I said, okay, listen, you just use this online curriculum, right? But we're going to use this as supplement to some physical workbooks, pen to paper. These kids can't write. Like, you can't read anything they're saying. Why? Because they're not practicing handwriting skills. They're on a computer typing. They can't even type because they're not even learning the proper typing skills. You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to have to give them pen to paper, and I advocate pen to paper. I'm a kinesthetic and a visual learner, so if I'm writing something down and like a couple weeks go by, I'm like, I know I wrote that down, and I visually remember writing it down, and that's just me, and I know a lot of people are like that, but it's like, if you get these kids out of these habits, they're not ever going to pick them up as they're older. And I do fall back on my fundamentals of learning, and even as I was teaching, like, oh, I remember this worked for me when I was a kid, so let me kind of bring it back. And so, you know, I'm very old school in that sense. I don't rely on technology, and as much as I can at home, you know, you bring out those flashcards and games and teach them to bake and cook, like use fundamental skills to teach academics, like all of those things. And we're getting away from that, unfortunately, in schools. So
yeah,
so much to talk on that one.
Yes. And it's so tricky just navigating the tech space, especially in education, because as you mentioned before, if you try to take away the phones, you're going to get a lot of resistance from the students. You're going to get resistance from some parents as well, because they're like, I want to be able to keep in contact with my students, because, you know, obviously in United States schools, there's a lot of concern about safety in schools, understandably so. And so, you know, students want to have their phones and parents want them to have their phones so that they can get direct contact with them. The downside of that is that students are constantly on their phone. And like that statistic that you said, they're constantly just doing things on their phone and growing. And it's just, it's trying to find that balance because it is so overstimulating and it does take so much of your mental energy that, you know, like I agree. So I do so much work on my computer just for my own work, and then trainings. I do a lot of virtual trainings, and the podcast. So I'm editing and doing all this stuff. And the other day I just sat outside with a book and I was like, oh my goodness, like a physical book.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. I haven't done this in so long. Just sit in the sun with my physical pages. Yeah. I'm like, wow. I felt relaxed. Like, you think I'm going to watch a show. I'm going to do this. I'm going to watch some TikToks for a couple minutes. Like, I'm going to relax. But it doesn't really relax you because you're just getting more stimulated. Yep,
absolutely. You are. And you do. And people wonder why the kids can't sleep. And I ask them, well, what time do you make them get off their electronics before they are winding down for bed? Because a lot of kids, you know, their minds are still going. And even my daughter tells me she has a hard time falling asleep sometimes. And it's like, well, what did you do to relax your mind before we lay down? And I did get out of the habit. I do need to do better on myself with that, but just making them, you know, read again before bed. Usually they're reading other times of the day, but I think moving that more towards like the bedtime, because again, they're away from the screen. Or my son, I started a bad habit, and sorry to his future girlfriend, but he's going to be listening to like meditation music his entire life at bedtime. But he you know, uses that to kind of wind down and listen to music before he goes to sleep and to try to like relax himself and, you know, like a calming environment. Yeah. And the same thing, like my kids hardly use my trampoline in our trampoline in the backyard. So I use it as my beach chair. Like, I just go out there and just lay down in the sun and take like a 10 minute and, you know, just relax. But then you think about that, right? We need this as adults, but high school, middle school, they don't have breaks to go outdoors unless it's gym, you know, and that's in a whole nother discussion, but it's like those things are not integrated in their day to day. And it does lead to a lot of, overstimulation and stress, and especially if they're in a learning environment and they can't, you know, digress or kind of take a break between or just kind of recoup from one content to the other, you know, that transition time that can be rough for our kids. So just kind of being mindful of those things as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We put a lot of stress on students in those transitions, and, you know, they get in the classroom and we're just like, okay, let's do this now. And it's like, okay, but they were just in a classroom for like 45 minutes to an hour, and then they just transitioned to this. And so it makes sense, right, that they might be a little wound up, that they might be a little like, you know, going stir crazy. Yeah. So like building in that activity to like, okay, let's take some breaths. Let's wiggle it out. Let's do what we got to do to get us to a space where we're ready to learn.
Absolutely. And you think adults, like when we're, you know, when all of us teachers are in conferences, or if you're a person that goes to conferences all the time, if you're in an all day, 8 hour PD, by the time you get to that last like one or two sections of the day, like you're done. Like you're over it. Like, even if the content is really interesting, and, you know, and I always try to put ourselves in these kids' shoes, because we expect so much out of them, but it's like, do we expect this from ourselves, or can we do it ourselves as adults? And you got to think it's a lot harder for them to do, especially when we're talking about managing emotions and all those things. And it's, it's a lot. It can be a lot.
It's a lot. It's so true. I know we kind of got on the technology piece and we went there, and I loved that.
Sorry. Oh, see, we got away. It's okay.
Oh no, it's fine. I think that was a great conversation. It was meaningful, needed to happen. But how do you reimagine education?
Oh, that's a great question. Interesting. So I saw, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's like a meme going out where the guy's like mopping the ocean and then to try to like clean up the ocean, right? But he's mopping it and wringing it out in the bucket. Yeah. And the caption says, "This is educators trying to clean up the education system." And I kind of laughed. Like, I was like, that's actually a really great depiction of what's happening. But my response to that was, we don't need this ocean anymore. We need a new ocean. Like, and so when I say reimagining, I do feel like we need a reset. I don't know what that looks like and how to get there 100%, but I just know because of years and decades of issues in schools, even leading to the new policies and things that are happening on a federal level around education, down to, you know, funding. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And things that don't make sense to me actually kind of aggravate me, because it's like, it's so simple, right? It could be so simple if we just allocate equal amount of funds per pupil, regardless of where they're at. Make sure your teachers are paid. Make sure you have current, up-to-date, reflective curriculum for everybody. Your teachers are certified, you know, all the very basic foundations. And it's hard to play catch-up of decades of problems. And so for me, I feel like it just needs a whole reset and set the standard high. Like, the standard is very low right now. And, you know, we get compared all the time to other nations and how they're performing. And even within our own nation here, and different demographics of students and how they're performing, if we're teaching all the same, right, or if we're following specific curriculum that is supposed to be the best for our kids, right? Because these are what schools are picking. Like, why are we still seeing these negative trends in education? Why do we still have all of these problems? And so to me, it is structurally a reset. You need to get the right people in place. I don't, I'm not ageist to say that, just a caveat, but I do feel that people that have older mindsets that can't adjust with time and the times that we're in, are the people that are hurting us the most and holding back. Kind of keeping traditional ways. And, you know, everything comes down to money. And unfortunately, when money is involved, politics are involved. And I don't feel that education is the place to have these conversations. We should be educating our kids, all of our kids, and there should not be these issues mm-hmm. with teachers and even me in my current role. I shouldn't need 2 jobs. Okay. I shouldn't, like, we dedicate so much time to what we're doing, and it's a simple mm-hmm. fix. It is. If you really think about it, how it simple is. It could be, but for some reason they like the problems, the drama, and we're going to just keep having it. And so at the end of the day, I think that reimagining is, you know, it's a structural reset. And it could be scary for some people, but I do think it's fundamentally mm-hmm. important because yeah, it's a lot. And I think also on the flip side of that is just to give equal access for everything to everybody. And I don't think we would have nearly as many problems as we see today.
Yes, you had so many beautiful gems in all of that. Yeah. I am here for a total education reset. I think we just need to be really intentional about yeah. our education system and what we actually want to see mm-hmm. from it. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that's gotten lost. I think there's a lot of money to be made yeah. with the school system being the exact way that it is. There's a lot of money to be made with the prison industrial complex. Yes. There's a lot of money to be made in these really big aspects of education and in those pursuits of, you know, capitalism, basically. Yeah. We've lost our way in education and we're failing so many students. Absolutely. So much potential is being failed mm-hmm. because we're not focusing on the right thing yeah. and we're not focusing on what students actually want and what they need. Yeah. And being able, like, education is such a beautiful thing because we're learning so much about it on a regular mm-hmm. basis, right? Our best practices are constantly changing. Yeah. Our understanding of how people learn is constantly changing. We're still understanding things about how the brain works, mm-hmm. right? And so as we keep learning and growing, we need our education system to also keep learning and growing with the times, growing with the students that we have today, not the students we had in the 50s, right. the students that we have in our hands right yeah. now, today. Mm-hmm. What do they need? What do they want? What is the future looking like for them? And being really intentional about how we're approaching that.
Absolutely.
So yes, I couldn't agree absolutely more. Just total reset. Let's just take a pause.
Yeah.
And start.
Because you would think, how many things would you have to fix? Like, why are we going to keep fixing? They don't want to fix it.
Yeah.
So let's just start over. Like, let's yeah. just start over. And I think the biggest piece yeah. is listening to the students. They will tell you exactly what it is that you need to know. And I've, yeah. I want to go in now, but I had a really prime example of my, of 18 seniors advocating for something, and their senior last year of their school career before they went to college, telling somebody, the principal, what they wanted to see out of their education, and it wasn't given to them, and it discouraged future teachers. And so, you know, it's yeah. like, we have to be very careful when we're playing with money in association to education. And this is why people have so much mm-hmm. negativity when it comes to education, why we fight over it anyways, because it is about the money, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But
yeah,
you know, hopefully we'll see what that looks like. But again, I think at the end of the day, parents just have to do what's right for them. If it's homeschooling, if it's charter, if it's yep. public education, you know, do what's right for your child. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I think I advocate for all my literacy people, just make sure they can read. That's fundamental,
yes.
you know.
Yes, please.
Like, that's the basic of everything, as long as they can read, because I'm tired of yeah. seeing these statistics of our kids not being able to read, of adults not being able to read. Like, mm-hmm. it's 2024. We have so many resources. What is happening in the early so elementary years that we're not educating our kids appropriately, or what are, if it's the parents, mm-hmm. the students, what is it, you know? But we need to figure something out, because yeah. this is gonna not look pretty for yeah. us in the next decade or two, with this current trend in education.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I did a whole podcast on literacy and just exploring that, mm-hmm. and it's a whole black hole that we start going down, and we're mm-hmm. like, but why are we, anyways, yeah. I won't get on that pedestal now, yeah. but yes, we need reading. We need writing skills for our youth. It's going into college. They don't have reading and writing skills. And that's a whole other conversation mm-hmm. as well. But I want to thank you so much for joining me. It was such a beautiful conversation, and I learned so much. Thank you for bringing in the stats. You brought receipts.
Oh yeah, that's the one thing you take it from me is the data. I love data, so we could talk about that next time.
Yes. I loved all about that. Where can my audience find you? Where can they see your podcast? Where are you hanging out on the internet?
Absolutely. So you'll find me at The Virtuoso Educator. And so I am on Instagram, Facebook, and then my podcast stream on YouTube. So it's all the same tag name. So you'll find me there. And I hope you guys will join me. I also do signups for my podcast. So if you're an educator or a parent or anybody that just wants to talk on a topic of education, you guys can join me on my platform as well.
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing all of your beautiful knowledge and just beautiful essence and energy with me. I just loved having you here.
Absolutely. Thank you for getting, it's only 8 or 9:15 now here. And so thank you for getting me up and energized this morning to start my day.
Best way to start your day.
Yes. Now I'm going to be like, we just talked about, I'm going to be thinking about a lot of these things today. But yes, thank you. I appreciate being
me
here.
Too. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and follow Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave a rating or review. It really does help the podcast to grow and reach more listeners just like you. You can find more Conscious Pathways on YouTube, on Instagram, a little bit on TikTok, but not that much. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn. It's just Brittany Carey. So if you're curious on what I talk about over there, you can come join me. Or you can find out more information on consciouspathways.org. I would love to hear from you. So please follow and like and comment. I love getting feedback from people who listen and just people who have questions. So feel free to talk at me. I love it. And until next time, don't forget to navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you then for more transformative conversations.